Okay, we are on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, looking at the page a little bit, almost at the halfway mark, almost at the halfway mark.
It's not on the screen.
Of course, because I forgot to put on the thing. Now, it should be there very soon. It should be there very soon. Okay, we're at Ravina Amar, a little bit less than halfway down the page. Okay, Ravina Amar. Okay, so now, when you have that, let's take a look at the notes. The notes were on Sugya 18. The central issue is, for which properties does the Mishnah exclude payment for damages? As which things get damaged you don't have to pay. We did the first statement of things that belong to Jews, which excludes non-Jews. And then there was another statement that said that the property to pay, you have to damage specific property. Specific property. And we didn't know that, what that meant exactly. What was it excluding? We had two answers yesterday. Answer number one of Rabbi Yehuda on point six. It excludes when we don't know which animal damaged. If two damn animals ran after, we don't know which damaged. You don't make anybody pay unless the owner owns both damages, and then they have, it's a specific property that's damaging. And answer number two excluded Hefker property, ownerless property. And we property and say, well, what's the insight? The answer is, we're speaking in case where the Hefker animal damaged your animal. And then you figured I'm at least entitled to grab the Hefker animal and take it from my am to recoup my losses, while a third party happened to watch everything that happened, and he went and he grabbed the Hefker animal. Well, you're out of luck. You know, the guy who now owns the Hefker animal does not have to pay you back and give you the Hefker animal. That's his animal now, because when it gored, it was Hefker, and there's no need to pay. And therefore, even though you would have liked to have taken that animal, you do not get that animal. So that's answer number two. We have one more answer to try to understand, what does the Mishnah mean? What is it excluding when it says specific property? And that's what Ravina is going to help us with now. Ravina Amar. Ravina says a third answer. These words, that the specific property comes to exclude Lemeute Nogach V'Acherkach Higdish. Scenario one is, you owned an animal and it gored, and you would normally have to pay, and you're a clever fellow, I don't know why you did this. You then, right after animal gored, you gave it to the Beis HaMikdash. You sanctified it. Right? So, once you've you made it holy. Or another scenario is, Nagach gored V'Acherkach Hifkir. Now you made it ownerless. You made it ownerless. So, look into 17. According to Ravina, the Mishnah teaches that the damaged party cannot collect from the owner of the damaging ox unless he still owns it when the case comes to court.
How do you make it ownerless? It was yours before.
It was yours. It was my cow, my ox. My ox went and gored your ox. Now I go over to the ox and I scream and yell so everybody should hear. I hereby declare my ox ownerless. Finished. I'm not the owner. The point being that you only pay from, remember, we're talking about an animal that you collect from. Okay, let's say a ton. We're not talking about other scenarios wouldn't apply. You know, if it's a muad, it's a financial obligation that is not tied into the animal. So a muad, this, you know, won't make, oh, so good, so you made it half good, big deal, right? But, we'll see. But he's saying, let's see. But it has to be, the owner has to own the ox when it goes to court. So let's clarify that better. The owner has to own the ox when it goes to court. So therefore the term, nechasim miyuchadim, privately held properties, means, according to this, that the damager must be in the possession of the same owner through the entire relevant period, from the time of the damage to the time the case comes before the court. That, in other words, because it's, you know, it's the animal gores, you just don't pay right away. You have to go to court. You go to court, they want to know who's the owner of the animal. It's no longer the animal. Well, there's nothing to pay. Okay, that's the concept over there.
So
what? Now, obviously, you know, we can't allow this to become a Pandora's box to allow everybody who Lord's animal just to make it hefker and to never be responsible for anything. So, well, obviously, the Bezdin would not normally allow that to happen. Again, this is from a biblical perspective. But the law is, and we'll see, it's going to bring a price that's going to say this law. So therefore, you only collect if the damaging animal has an owner, to the exclusion of if it had an owner when it damaged, and now it does not have an owner when it goes to court, you don't have to pay. That's the law. So now let's see the price. Based on a brisa. It's a brisa. It's explicit brisa. So if the brisa explicitly says it, we're saying that becomes the interpretation of the Gemara. So let's see what the brisa is. Tanya Nami Achi, we have a brisa which also taught us this very same law. As we're picking it up, as they say, in the middle of the brisa. Let me just find the in my Gemara for a minute. Excuse me one second.
It's right here, Rabbi. Right there.
Here we go. Okay. Over there, the brisa is talking like this. It's a machlokas hachamim Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to just give you the snippet right in the middle. But the introduction is a machlokas hachamim Rabbi Yehuda in a brisa later on in Daf Mem Dalet Amud Beis. If an ox that's hefker kills a person, the rabbis say it doesn't get stoned. Rabbi Yehuda says it does get stoned. Okay, that's not the point we need to know, but that's what's in the middle. Now Rabbi Yehuda continues and says another insight. Yes, sir, okay. Moreover, Amar Rabbi Yehuda says the following. Afilu nogach, even if it gored v'acher kach hiktish, if an owner owned it, and it gored, and afterwards he made it holy, or nogach v'acher hifker, or he owned the animal that gored, and afterwards made it hefker, potor, you do not have to pay. Now, where does he come up with this? From this, it's a pasuk in the Torah. Shenemar, the pasuk in the Torah says, this is Shmos Chaf Aleph Chaf Tes. Okay? So let's take a look at that. Exodus 21:29. Shmos Chaf Aleph, I almost have it. Just one paragraph away. Okay, we're talking about an ox that gores. Okay, talking about an ox, previous case that kills a person. We stone it, etc. 29. Vim shor nagachu mitmol shalshom. If this animal was an animal that gored in the past, yesterday and the day before, here's the critical words. Vehuad biv all love. And its owner had been warned. Okay, v'lo yishmer, and now he doesn't watch it. And then it kills somebody else. You stone the animal, and also the owner dies. Doesn't mean the owner dies, it means he pays for the value of the person who got killed. But anyway, you see the words, the critical words over here are the critical word doesn't want to come with me. For huad biv all love. Okay? It was the owner was warned in court. Alright? So from those words, he was warned in court. Shenemar, it says, for it says in a pasuk, "Vohuad biva love," and its owners had been warned. And then the pasuk goes on, "Vehemis ish," and it killed a person. So what does that tell us? And then he brings us the full text over there, etc., etc. So what is it telling us? Ad shetehe misa v'amoda bedin shavim keechad. There has to be the killing and bringing to court at the same time. Meaning under the same ownership. The ownership cannot change from the time that the animal killed and that the animal was brought to court. Now this is supporting Ravina's pshat of how we learn our Mishnah, because there's an explicit brisa that says this. Let's look at footnote 20, elaborates on this. The mention of the word bi'olav, its owners, at both the beginning and the end of the verse, indicates that the owner spoken of at the end of the verse is the same as the one mentioned at the beginning of it. Thus we learn that there must be one owner from the time the ox kills, the subject of the beginning of the verse, until the time it is brought to court to be judged, the subject of the end of the verse. Again, let's take a look at the verse again. See? Let's look better. It says, again, 29. If the ox gores, for who ad divalov, and the owner was warned, velo yishmerenu vehemis isho isha, and it killed a person, hashrei sekel vegam be'olav you must, and its owner dies. Again, it doesn't die. You see the word be'olav in the beginning and the end, when it does the damaging and when it's brought to court. So we see two times we have the word be'olav. To say it's got to be the same owner. You don't have to have, the word twice. But since it's there twice, therefore it means when the animal did what it did and when it goes to court. And therefore it has to be at the same time. If it's not at the same, if it's not the same guy, there's no case that we can render over here.
It says the owner was warned, so therefore the owner is punished for not being careful with the ox. Is that right?
Yeah, but we're saying we bring him to court. He's brought to court. And we also say that when the animal kills, right, then we say the animal is stoned and the owner is killed.
So what's the concept of the ox is stoned? What does that do?
Well, it's a very disparaging thing that an ox that killed a human being is able to walk around free.
Yeah.
It's insulting to human beings. Uh-huh. It's not covered for a human being, that the human being is dead and the cow's alive. How could that be? Yeah. The ox is alive.
So the owner, at the time the ox kills the person, and then a day later he gives the ox to somebody else, is he off the hook because by the time it goes to court he doesn't own the ox anymore? He's not the owner of both ends?
Yeah, no, that would be a problem.
I mean, yeah.
We'd have to see how we get around that.
That's what we're using as a basis to support another argument.
Right, so we'd have to see. I've looked further and see, why wouldn't a person do this all the time? You get off of any fight.
Depends on the value of the ox.
Let's say every time a muad does damage more than its value, a guy will always want to walk away from it.
Exactly.
But you get killed anyway, so you may as well just say it's ornament. Saves your life.
Well, you don't get killed.
You don't
pay
get killed,
money.
Shelley.
Right. From Rashi, let's see what it says in the footnotes a little more. From Rashi's statement that the verse teaches that the ox must belong to one owner throughout the entire period, it would seem that even if the owner sold the ox to another person during this period, rather than consecrated, the exemption would still apply. It's even more now. He could sell it. It's appeared from Rashi. Since it is not owned by the same person going to the end. Okay, Lecha Mishnah, blah, this is even more strongly indicated in Rashi, blah, blah, blah. Rash, however, understands the verse teaching only that during this period, the ox must be privately owned, but not necessarily that it have the same owner. So Rashba argues on this. Hence, if it is consecrated or declared ownerless in the interim, the exception applies, but if it is sold to another person, the exception does not apply. It's also the view of Tosa, etc., etc. So the machlokes you could sell, but still, everyone seems to agree that if it's ownerless, or you give it the base of Migdash, you don't pay. The Gra, also in first from Rashi, the animal must be continuously owned throughout the period. Thus, owner declared it ownerless after it gored and then reacquired it before the case came to court. The damaged party could not collect.
Oh,
wow. Torah rules that he could collect since the animal was owned by him both at the time that it killed and at the time it comes before the court. Okay, this is not such a simple halacha. Okay, we have to look further into the latter commentaries. This could be a very abused halacha. So I hear the question. We'll have to do further research on the abuse that could come out of this. Okay, but that is the law, and this price certainly supports Rav Avinah's interpretation of the Mishnah, right? That holds that an owner of consecrates or declares the thing ownerless after damage is exempt from pain. Okay, alrighty. Okay. Now, he says, before it comes to court. Alright. So, right now it appears that it's saying you have to own it from the time it damages until it comes to court. So now the Gemara's going to ask just a side question. Side question, a side answer. It's not really true. It's not until it comes to court. It has to go further than that. Until the Beis Din decides what the law is. So just catching him on a little detail. And that's what Gemara's going to ask. Gemara din lo beina, don't you need the owner to own the animal when the final judgment is made also? Not just bring it to court. He has to own it while, right? Because the pasuk says, Because it says, ha, the pasuk says, hashor yisakel, the ox is stoned. And it says, and the owner's there. So yeah, so it seems, bigmar din hu dichsiv, it's speaking about, concerning the verdict. So why did you say just brought to court? The owner says, you're right, I shouldn't have said that. Elema, but rather we should read it like this. You have to have the killing, bringing to court, and the final law of the court has to be with him being the owner of that. And that's what the Braisa says. Okay. So that's so, okay, we have that question. We'll have to look into it. How could this law not be abused? Again, certainly where the value of the animal is worth more than the damage, it will never be abused. Right? That's for sure, it will never be abused. The question is, it could be, and you know, most damages would be worth less than the value of the animal. Most. Right? Because what can it damage already? If it eats crops, this kind of stuff, it's not going to be more than its value. Killing, only if it kills an ox that's more expensive than that ox. Okay? That's one way. So we have to see how people could not get away by abusing that law. Let's take a look at our notes. Starting from point 14, answer number 3 of Ravina. If Reuven's ox damaged and Reuven made it hektish or hefker, he's exempt. That's the case. Support from a braisa that says, even if the owner made his animal hektish or hefker after damage, he's exempt. We learn from the words, the owner was warned and it killed, that the killing and bringing to trial must be like one. Meaning that all animal had one owner the entire time. Question, is this enough? We should also require the final verdict in the same status, because the pasuk says the ox will be stoned. It's the final verdict. Correction, indeed, the killing, bringing to trial, and final verdict must be like one. Okay, and therefore our resolutions are as follows. When are damages not paid? When, number one, non-Jewish property is damaged. If I damage a goy's property, I don't pay. Number two, now the next 3 points are the 3 answers we gave. When we don't know which animal caused damage and they don't belong to one owner. When a hefker animal damaged and a third party acquired the animal before the nizik could collect. Right, that's the case. Four, when the mazik makes his animal hefker or hektish, I should add. Hefker or...
I don't get number 3. I mean, if it's hefker, who's he going to collect from? How can you say
no, that's what we said. That another guy went and took it. That's the chiddush. Remember, that was the question. If an ownerless animal gores, and you, the damaged party, you figure, I'm going to take this ownerless animal, at least recoup that, then another guy comes and just takes ownership before you can collect it. And I might think, well, if you're already taking ownership, so you start paying. No, he says, I wasn't the owner. And that fits into the last one. Again, when the mazik makes his animal hefker hektish after damage, because it has to be owned the entire time. Because after damage. Okay, that's the resolutions, and that's the end of that sugya. We now begin sugya number 19. And the central issue, the way I've written it is, now we talked about what type of property. Now we're going to talk about which places. Physical places. The damager's property, damagee's property, public property. In other words, where does it have to take place? And the mission will say where it takes place. We have to figure what's it excluding. So the issue is, in which places where damages occur, does the Mishnah exclude payments for damages? Where are there exclusions? These places provide exclusions. That's the central issue. And now we continue with the Gemara. Again, we have an easy little piece, a one-liner, and then a much longer piece that will probably carry us into the end of the week. And we start the next sugya. Chutz, it says you do not pay when it damages mirishus hamiyuchedes lamasik in a property that is reserved for the damager. Meaning, simple case, I have my own property, I have my own big sign that says beware dangerous dog in my house. He bites, he doesn't ask questions. And now somebody without permission comes into my house and my dog kills it. Right? So that, it's excluded. If the damaging party, it's the property, the damager's property, and the damagee is in there, well then you don't pay for that. That's excluded. So the Gemara is just gonna give the reason. Question is why? Why? So why? Why should you be potter? Because it's just a one-liner. De Amar Lei, because the owner of the Rottweiler will say, Torcha Berishusi, my boy, what was your ox doing in my field? I didn't give any permission. Footnote 22 elaborates. A person is not required to guard his ox against damaging within the confines of his own property, since others have no right to enter there. So that's simple, and there are already two dots over there. So therefore, we just simple straight notes, statement of Mishnah, except in the premises of the damager. Reason, this is because he can say your ox had no right to be on my property. Finished. Now we go to the more next case of the Mishnah, which is much more tricky. And this is going to take up a lot more time. We'll just start it today, and we'll spend much more time tomorrow on this. Let us begin with the next piece. Then it says, what else is excluded? Urishus hanizik vehamazik. And something that is the domain of the nizik and the mazik, shared together. Now, the problem we're going to have over here is we don't know how to read this Mishnah. We're going to have trouble reading this Mishnah. Now, what we really should do is go back to the Mishnah and see the Mishnah and understand what the issue is over here. In other words, the question is like this. Let's say partners own a field. So now, and I have a few cows and you have a few cows. What if my cow damaged your cow? The question is there an exclusion or not? Because on the one hand, it's the damager's field. And we said the damager's field is excluded. We just learned that before. On the other hand, the damagee has a right to be there. Yeah. So that's already, so, and the Mishnah seems to just exclude it. So the question is it just straight excluding it or not? We're going to find some machlokes of the Amoraim. But it's all based on how we read the Mishnah. So we really have to go all the way back to the Mishnah on Tes Amid Beis. Right? Where was that Mishnah? On Tes Amid Beis. So this is going to make us problematic. Let's see how quickly I can maneuver this. That wasn't too bad. Okay. Here's the Mishnah. Now let's go right over here. Okay, that's what we just read. You'll see why we have to see this, because when you'll see it in front of your eyes, it'll be clear. It says, and in every place you pay, chutz mershus hamiyuchedes lamazik, except in a domain that's exclusively the damager's domain. And now the next clause says, that's one we just learned, mershus hanizik lamazik, a property that belongs both to the damaged party and the damager. Now here's the problem. We have a third clause, and this is where the problem begins. And the third clause says, kishehizik, and when it damages, Chava Mazik L'shal, the damager is obliged to pay Tashlumi Nezek, to pay the payment, but may the rest of the best of the land. That's that last clause. So I'll tell you the argument, and then you'll see. So there's three clauses. Let's understand the three clauses. Clause number one says, you don't pay when it's the exclusive domain of the damager. For sure you have to understand, because it says, you pay in every place except a place that's reserved for the damager. Now, the question is, the punctuation of the next clause, do we say this is a period or is this a comma to the next clause? Clause one is for sure. Says you pay if it damages everywhere except for the damager's property. Now, do we put a period there and start a new sentence? Or do we put a comma and it's a compound sentence? So let's read it as a compound sentence. Okay, except in a place that the damager owns and a place that's jointly owned by the damager and the damagee. You don't pay. Period. Then we have a new line. And when the damage happens, you pay for the best of the property. And that's a general statement over everything. That's one way to learn it. Or we could say, like this. First clause. Every place you pay except the property of the damager. Period. Period. And a place that belongs to the damager and the damagee. What do you do? Next clause runs on to that. If it damages, you pay from the best of the property. You hear? There's two different ways to read the Mishnah. Now, what's it going to depend on? It depends what you hold. Joint property owned. Do you pay for the other, if you damage the other guy on joint property owned? Uh-huh. That's what the virus is going to be. How do we read? Do we say there's three clauses? Do clause one and two go together? And therefore you don't pay? And that the third clause is a generic thing? It's talking about paying in general? Now, or do we say, no, it's clause one, period. Clause two goes with three and you do pay. That's the way we're not sure how to learn the Mishnah. Got that? So that's all going to be now. Now, let's see if I can get myself really back fast. Okay. There we are. Wasn't too bad. One more. Okay, here we go.
If you would have just pushed on Mishnah, I would have just jumped you there. The text of Mishnah, if you would have just pushed on that.
Pushed on what?
See where it says Mishnah in 23, the
underlying
Mishnah, that link would take you right to 9.
You think so?
Yeah. Try it.
What about 5
seconds? No, I don't want to do that now. And the text of the Mishnah. No, it's okay.
You did it in mine.
Okay. I'll do it for next time. Just go ahead. So now, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Ibi. Rav Chista, name of Avimi, says the following. Chotzer Hashutvim. A property that is jointly owned. Okay? What do you do if one animal lures the other animal? Chiev Ba Al Hashem Va'al Haregel. The Torah obligates one to pay for damages of eating and trampling. Now, how does he know that? So let's take a look at footnote 24. Or five, it says, with regard to the damage of Shein Regel, the Torah says, we already had it, who be air, be stay acher. Remember it says, and it consumes in another person's field. The Gemara below, which derives from this, that one is liable for Shein Regel damage only if it takes place in someone else's field, but not in the public domain. That we know. The issue here is how to treat a jointly owned yard with respect to its partners. That is, if an animal belonging to one of the owners, does Shane or Regal damage to the property of the other owner? Let's say it ate food or stepped on utensils belonging to the other owner. Is the animal's owner liable? So Rav Chista, who we just quoted, rules that though the animal's owner is a partner of the yard in which the damage took place and has the right to use it, the yard is nonetheless considered the field of another and is not like the public domain exempted by the Torah. Thus the Mazik is liable to pay for the damage. Okay? Rav Chista states his ruling in regard to Shein and Regel damage because that is the novelty of it is. It goes without saying that the Mazik will be liable for Karen damage done to his partner in a jointly owned yard. This one is liable even for Karen damage done in the public domain itself. So Rav Chista holds your chayiv. That's considered a beer b'serach. The other guy has permission to be there. And that seems to be a very logical position. That seems to be a logical position. Now, how do we read the Mishnah? How do we read the Mishnah based on that? If you're chayav, v'hochi kamar. And this is how we have to read the Mishnah that I just showed you. Chutz, the first clause is, when don't you pay? Mirishus ha-miyuchet eslamazik. A property that is designated to the damager alone. Add the word now, period. Dipotur, that you do not pay, period. Now the next clause. The next clause is Urshus HaNizik Mazik. What about property that the both of them can be there? Now we run on the sentence to the next sentence. Kishehizik Chavamazik. When it does damage, the damager has to pay. So that's how he learns the Mishnah. On the other hand, Rav Elazar says no. Well, says when they're partners in the property, he says, Potar ala Shein vala Regel. You do not pay for Shein and Regel. Now that one needs more interpretation. So let's look at footnote 26. In Rav Elazar's view, damage done in a jointly held property to a partner's possessions is not considered damage in the field of another. He feels that does not fulfill the requirement of another field because the owner of the damaging party is also part owner of the property in which the damage took place. It's not the field of another, it's also my field. That's how he learns it. Right? So that's with Shane and Regal. Look at the brackets, interesting. Because remember, that pasuk is only talking about Shane and Regal. That pasuk there, it says the two mazikim with Shane and Regal. It does another field. Look what he says. So in the brackets, even Rav Lezer Gizar, that he is liable for care and damage done in this property. For such a property is no worse than the public domain, which is liability for care. Remember, if my animal eats and travels something in a public domain, I don't pay. So he's extending, if we jointly own it, I don't pay it. But if my animal would even gore in the public domain, I'd have to pay. So that's not a law in another field. That is, goring, it should, if another has rights to be there, then that's the law. But if by eating, he says, you'll be potter. So how do you read the Mishnah now? And this is how we read the Mishnah. We say, chutz, the first clause, Mishnah Zemichas Lamazik. We exclude a property that belongs only to the Mazik, and now we add, run on the sentence, Urishus HaNizik VaMazik Nami Potter, and also, if it belongs to both of them, you're also potter, period. And now the last clause, Ukeshehizik, Chavamazik, now you got this extra clause. And when the damage comes, you have to pay. Now there's a problem though. Wait a minute. If you're gonna learn like that, isn't that superfluous? Why is that clause superfluous? Keshehizik Chavamazik. At the end of the Mishnah, it's superfluous. You know why? Do you remember the first Mishnah? Remember way, way back the first Mishnah. What did the end of the first Mishnah say? What did all four of us, the Zikin, have in common? It's owned by someone, the owner's responsible, and if it damages, it pays by the best property. The last line of the first Mishnah and the last line of the second Mishnah is identical. You can't have two lines being identical. Now, according to the first rabbi, it may be identical, but it's coming to tell me a specific law. Since we broke up the sentences differently, right? We said, sentence one, private property, potter. Jointly owned property, if it damages, it pays for the best. Huh, you gotta pay, and then it's not extra. But here, if you're saying that we exclude private property and jointly owned property, period, so what do you need that extra clause at the end? It's exactly a repetition from the first Mishnah. You follow? That's the problem according to that interpretation. So he says, you know what? Well, you know, we never, according, you know, so he says, that extra clause comes, la suye karen. It comes to include goring, which was not mentioned in the first Mishnah. It was not mentioned in the first Mishnah, which only lead us on to another question, but we're going to have to stop over here. So let's just take a look at the notes over here. We're on point number three. Statement of the Mishnah. And the joint property of a damager and victim. Explanation of Rav Chista is, one is liable for shein and regel in the joint property of the damager and victim. The Mishnah means, we read like this, except in the premises of the damager where he is exempt. Period. Period. In the joint property of the damager and victim, when he damages, he must pay. And it runs on to the rest of the sentence. Explanation of Rabbi Lazar, no. One is exempt for shein and regel in the joint property of the damager and the victim. The Mishnah reads like this. Except in the premises of the damager or in the joint property of the damager and victim where he's exempt. Alright, now you got that last clause that's extra. And when he damages, he must pay. Comes to include Karen. Now that last line is going to lead to the last illustration because if you guys remember, there was a whole machlokas, Rav and Shmuel in the beginning of the first parak on that Mishnah. That we're going to begin to talk about tomorrow that will affect this. But here we have a machlokes, joint property ownership for just Shane and Regal. Remember, goring, there's no argument. No argument by goring. Just Shane and Regal, do you have to pay in joint property? That's going to be the discussion of tomorrow. Shkoyach, everybody.
Boy, it's very hard when the notes are pre-written and you have to write the notes. Wow. Okay.
I'm stretching you.
Well, I don't know if I can. I've got two notes, and I don't know where to stop when you put the other two together before, and whew, I've got a lot of work. Okay. It's just, it's really,
I gotta
get somebody, because you're doing good for this group, but it's not.
Yeah, I hear the challenge.
It's very challenging for me. Very challenging, because nobody's writing notes here other than me.
I don't have to think after point.
Okay.
Hmm? Yeah, reporters. Still going.